Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome again to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shankberg, and again joined with Kirk Gray. We're going to talk about a HALT and highly accelerated life testing. Today, we really want to explore, what do you do to get started? You may have heard of HALT. You may have seen it referred to in a manual or online someplace. Maybe even heard about it in a webinar or a training class at some point. But how do you get started? HALT is expensive. It destroys prototypes. And in some cases, you're not going to be given a prototype to even work with because you just don't have any. Kirk and I were just talking about an oil expiration type product, and sometimes they only make 10 of these things and no prototypes. But, you know, Kirk, what do you think? How do you get started with HALT testing? What would you advise someone to do to get started?
Well, that's
first
a good
step, just the first step. I know you go long sometimes, so just the first step.
First step, Fred, is you assess the understanding the company has of the HALT process and what the pain level is for failures in their company. If they are have a reliable product, that can be a challenge. But basically, the first step is to talk with them, find out what their problems are if you can. If you already know what they are, then one of the ways you can do is demonstrate with a product that you know has a known weakness in it. And by putting it in a HALT chamber and doing some step stress, you'll be able to show that to your management that that could have been discovered in a very rapid, short HALT test and would have been something you corrected easily, much more easily in the design phase.
Well, that I think what you touched on is that, you know, the education piece, the what are we trying to do here in many product development processes and in installing new systems? We need to know what's not working in order to go fix it. There's a
right.
And so there's value in that. If I can find it sooner and find it clearly, the design team can then go do something about it. But when you have, say, 1,000 components on your system, it's really hard to make them all perfect and last forever and very robust.
Right.
So it's
right.
Back to that. The first step, and you mentioned, is basically, well, what are we trying to do? Well, we're trying to improve the product. One way is to expose where the weaknesses are. And
right.
If that's your objective, is to find problems in your current benchtop testing and your current prototyping system, is not finding problems until, say, later in the program or they get to the field and customers find it, well, then that's the classic signature for HALT is a great tool for this application. But
right.
What you mentioned is, I think, just one of many ways to actually get started. One is to prove that the process does reveal meaningful things. Now, another way is, and this happens when maybe you've got more buy-in from your team or you got some resources that you can explore it with, is just try it. There's plenty of laboratories around the country and around the world that have equipment that will allow you to stress your product. You mentioned step stress, and we'll talk more about that actual what happens in a testing in a different show. But the idea is just go try it. Take your prototype. Know that you're going to expose it to overstress, and you're going to explore what happens. And just try it. And sometimes you find things that are amazingly, you would have never found them. Your customers most likely would have, but you just find it, and that provides value and proves right. that it works.
Especially if it's been found in a predecessor product before, and it was corrected in, you know, later in the field or after it got to the field, you've got a big bonus there.
That's right, and you're avoiding field problems, and that has very direct value back to the organization. The other way to get hold off on ways to sort out value from hull testing. That could be a whole couple of episodes by itself.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I think the bottom line is that it's part of where's your organization? You know, if your boss and the major decision makers in your organization understand the concepts. Say they've been in the same webinar or class, or they used to work in a company that did it. You're probably going to sell it pretty easily and add it to the portfolio or your plan directly. What happens when you're not there?
Right, and the problem, I guess, Fred, one of the important things I would emphasize is it really has to be at a buy-in at the executive level, because a lot of money, as you said, it can be a costly process, or seem to be very high dollars for testing. And so it really is important that you have the financial agreements or the resources from upper management.
Right. Well, it's more than that, though, right? It's
understanding is. In fact, once they understand it, they will probably be happy to fund the effort. And especially if you can show them that you've discovered something, or you can discover something very quickly that they've already had pain in the field from. That's a boy. That should open the doors for the coffers.
Yeah, it's. I think it's. There's like two steps to get started. One is recognize that you need to find defects sooner than what you currently do. That the value of finding weaknesses in your product allows you to all kinds of benefits. One is recognize that it's the right tool for your for your situation. But second, and as Kirk is mentioning, is it's as or more important is that you get the buy-in. And it's kind of a common business term, this concept of buy-in. But it really becomes important. One is you need resources and a prototype or two, and you need the time to go do this. It doesn't take long, but it does take time and resources to make it happen. Mm-hmm. But the second part is that when you have results – and Kirk, I'm sure you've run into this, is mm-hmm. we bring the results to the team and they go, you overstressed it.
Right. Of course it breaks when you do that.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you, silly?
Then the question is, how relevant is the failure or the weakness to the field? And that either you have a case history or something to tie that or show that was a weakness. Otherwise, you are going to have a very tough sell.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I've got we could probably do a couple of shows just on war stories. One of the most successful halts that I did was with a team that hadn't done it before. They perceived it as being relatively low value. And the product itself was relatively inexpensive. We had a bunch of prototypes. So we did some testing on them, and we had I snuck into the plan to do halt testing. So we trotted off to a laboratory, and it was mostly vibration. This product was a handheld, and we were mm-hmm. mostly interested in drop and shock vibration type things.
Right.
And so it was a battery cabinet basically suspended over a circuit board, and the mm-hmm. battery wires originally would go straight down into the circuit board. They were straight through holes, straight pins. Mm-hmm. The circuit board design changed at some point, and they had about an inch offset from where the battery cabinet was to where they wanted the positive lead to come into mm-hmm. the battery. So they said, well, we'll bend the wire and put a two right angle turns in it so that it comes down, turns right, and then turns left and goes down into the circuit board.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't show up as a risk anywhere. Nobody thought much of it. Mm-hmm. So we stick the product in the chamber and we're running it through some paces, and it hadn't been in there very long and it failed. And when we opened up the chamber where this vibration and temperature was being controlled, you could mm-hmm. smell the burning phenolic of the circuit
yes.
board. You
know? Yes, yes, a familiar smell to most of us in the hall.
That's right. And it says, something's not right here. So we take it apart, and it was blatantly obvious that the wire didn't have enough clearance over the circuit board. It came right down to the board and laid right across the board and then went into the through hole where it was soldered in. Yeah, but that one-inch piece then would vibrate relative to the circuit board. And, of course, it was right over a negative trace, you know, the ground trace mm-hmm. where this positive lead was going down into.
Right, of course.
And the solder mask, right, or the conformal – or not even conformal coating. It was just the basic circuit board with a little bit over the lead or the trace on the board. It wore through that pretty quick. You could see it where it was rubbing through, and it finally dead shorted, drained the battery right through it, and charred the circuit board.
Right, right. So, Fred, what was the fix to that? I bet you it didn't cost a whole lot.
Oh no, not at all. We changed how the wire was bent, and they did a couple other things to mitigate it.
What do you think? A few cents, or you know, I mean,
cost of the product was almost insignificant. It probably cost the mechanical engineer, you know, an hour to explain how to assemble this wire and where the bends would be. And I think he changed a drawing. The test took us a day. We found all kinds of cool stuff, but that was the one. I just took a picture of it and, you know, sent it off to him. And the next day it was changed. So it was sometimes you get lucky where the failure is something that you hadn't anticipated at all. And you probably weren't going to find it. And it's just it's a home run in that regard.
And the great thing is it costs very little to fix it right when you found it. I mean, it was an easy change, and it will then prevent many of those wires touching and shorting out if it hadn't been changed in the future.
That's right.
Or you would have found it. It would have been found. It just would have been found by the customer. Yeah. And that would have cost a heck of a lot more. Just think of the ratio of what you found and the cost of the lab to how many that would be, you know, especially if they lost the market or lost market share because of the product being unreliable.
Yeah. So it's there's the two parts to getting started with HALT. One is recognize that it's a good tool and that it applies in your particular circumstance. And then second is to get that acceptance with the rest of your organization, because the HALT itself is just a tool. If it helps people make decisions and to improve the product, then you're accomplishing something and it provides value. So you can give it a try in an existing product. Does it find the things that you suspect it will find that your customers are already finding for you? And that builds credibility that the process actually works. And mm-hmm. two is, in some cases, you may be fortunate and the team is willing to give it a try and experiment with it. And you provide the education and background and knowledge, and then you go try it on your existing product. And in mm-hmm. the third case is really... And I think it's not a third case. It's you do this in all cases, is when and why is HALT testing the appropriate tool? And how does it work? What's its philosophy and so on?
Right. It's a tool, and it's really a broad concept that people think of it as vibration and thermal cycling or thermal step stress only. But there's many, many different, like voltage, other things that can be used in HALT and need to be considered properly and planned for before a HALT is applied.
That's a whole other episode, isn't it?
That is. We have a lot to talk about in this realm, and certainly that is one of them. So,
all right. Well, let's wrap it up for today, and hopefully you got a couple of steps to help you get started in implementing HALT in your organization if it's not already going.
All right. Thanks for having me, Fred.
All right. Thanks, Kirk. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.